And we are live. There we go.
We are live. Hello.
Welcome, Brian, back to the live stream again.
Hey.
We've also got Dr. Rick. He's the live stream virgin tonight. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for doing this, guys. I appreciate it. It's awesome. We're gonna chat about some guitar stuff, take some questions, maybe have a chat about a few other things as well.
Yep. But, medical problems, rashes, embarrassing body parts,
and discharges.
That's all I want to talk about. Tonewood. And the tone right.
Yeah, the tone right is the greatest piece of equipment ever. We worked that out last time, I'm pretty sure.
Except I think before you use it, you need to wax because it got caught up last time I used it. Ow! Yeah.
All right. We've got some Melbourne folks here. We've got Dylan, Zed.
Hey, Dylan.
We've got BP Dara. I think that's how you pronounce that. And Ajunk. Ajunk was first. So feel free to type first into the chat there and you'll be commended. Let us know where you're from. We have 36 people here already in the first minute. That's pretty cool.
That's crazy. So can we see the questions or the?
I should have gone over this with you before. Yeah. So if you go to YouTube and load up a browser window, just you can play the stream and you'll see the chat there.
Okay. So
but just mute the or pause the live video. Otherwise, you'll be hearing both, and it'll be really confusing.
I can't do that. I have challenges with IT, so you just tell us your questions.
That's all right. Yeah, I'll keep an eye on it. I got everything organized here. I don't know if Ryan's looking at the
I am.
You are. Yeah, I should have gone over that with you before, Rick. I totally forgot.
That's okay.
All right. So we've got Jason from Bathurst. We've got BP Durras from London. Space Jazz, welcome. Already had our first question. EP Booster, what do you think about it? Has anyone tried one of those?
Yes. I have. Yeah, they're pretty good. I have. Oh man, this is gonna sound like the humble brag, but I have the EP3.
Oh, you've got an Echoplex.
Yeah, I've got an Echoplex that I bought for really cheap. and it sounds amazing. And the EP3, the pedal is. It sounds good, but if you compare it to the original, I think the original sounds better. But on its own, it sounds awesome. So don't listen to me. What do I know?
Cool.
Yeah. I think I tried one a while ago, but I guess for something to be in my signal chain, it really has to do something pretty great. So. Yeah. I thought it was okay, but I was a bit underwhelmed. And those little pedals, they're pretty expensive for what they are, I reckon. So
yeah,
what a $300 volume boost pedal.
Actually, they're kind of like $150.
Oh, okay.
$180, I think. $150, $180, and they're tiny and they do one thing, which is supposedly make it better, but I don't know. My answer to you, dude, is try it with your board and try it with your amp, absolutely. Because if it's if it makes your rig sound better, then I guess that's the whole point. And one thing I will say, and I'm sure the other guys know this as well, when you try at home or at the store, it's going to be different when you play live, because when your amp is turned up, I'm assuming you're playing a tube amp or something, but when your amp is turned up,
are there other sorts of amps?
Bandit.
No, they're toys. They're not amps.
Oh. it kept up all right last night.
5 minutes in and already
shot fired.
I get no. Getting pretty ganged up on here tonight. So we just had a statement from Jason. He said, "Is Ryan talking through bad Epiphone pickups?" Yeah, he said, yeah, your mic's a little muffled. I'll get you another mic. It's all right. It's working all right. I can understand you. It's just I think it might not be quite as clear as us. Can you hear?
It's just the Mac. It's just the Mac. Or is it because I'm Asian? I don't know.
Yeah. Why don't you go blow your nose? That might help. Don't do so much blow. That could be it too.
Yeah. Well,
Space Jazz says, Doc, it's all good. My missus is an admin for neuropsychology at the Austin. Constantly tells me how bad the doctors are with computers. But I guess you make up with it in other ways. So,
not really. We're pretty bad at most things, but oh, that's awesome. No, so my answer again for the EP would be that, again, you need to try it through your rig at concert volume and just make sure that it doesn't take away anything. Are they true bypass those things?
I think so. I've never owned one because I've never seen the need to use one.
No, look, and I think anything that small, I don't know. It just feels like it might be a compromise as far as getting into that small package, but
yeah,
that could just be my own insecurities coming out. But because I've got this Pete Cornish. Oh, sorry, no, that's a name dropper thing. But I've got this Pete Cornish. All it does is a clean boost as well. It's got an NB2.
Well, that rocks, that thing.
Yeah, but even when it's not on, the tone, it's brighter, and you roll down on the volume knob and you don't lose the top end because it's got this buffer that just sort of, and that's a whole other can of worms that we can get into, true bypass versus buffers. But for mine, if you're running, more than a couple of pedals, you need at least one buffered pedal. And there's some that say you need a buffer at the start and a buffer at the end of the chain too. So you just have to be sure that when you add the EP in that you're not losing something because of the true bypass thing.
Yeah, I've never tried a legit one. I actually got sent a copy, which I was never going to put on YouTube. I think you might have seen them, Rick. I can't remember, but they were basically like illegal clones. I did a video on that a while back, but yeah, it's crazy.
Didn't we throw them into the beach at the end of your street?
Yeah. So Joel Pickett says, Ryan, how often do you get to crank up that Silver Jubilee?
I should do this. So that's the only Marshall that I own, and it's my Marshall. It's like my go-to Marshall amp. So I guess any time I do a rock gig, that comes out. So recently, not much because I've been doing the blues thing a lot. But in the past 6 months, you know, like maybe a week, every once a week, I'll bring it up to a gig and crank it. It's a great time. It's one of the original ones in 1987, Silver Jubilee, and they've obviously made the reissue, which actually we were at a music store, the three of us, and we cracked this small one, and it was sounding awesome. It's so amazing. It was a tiny, tiny box, and a guy bought it that day. Do you guys remember?
Yeah.
That killed me, man. I was just in the process of falling in love, and that dude came and cut my lunch.
Do you remember what you told me on the phone? Was it yesterday or today we were talking about that amp, Rick?
I said I added him on Facebook and I'm going to track him down and kill him and get that amp. No.
Was it? You're like, I should have bought that amp.
Yeah, I really did dig it. And yeah. I'm a lazy bugger as far as a head and box thing goes, but that was pretty damn cool, actually. That was definitely one that got away.
Yeah, I loved the look of it. I mean, it was small, it was looked tidy, it was simple.
Yeah, yeah.
It was cool. The only thing for me, no reverb, but you sort of, it doesn't bother you so much. You just, they say, what do they call the reverb? The talent control. Is that what Greg Koch calls it? So the more reverb you need, the worse you play?
I mean, I actually like delay just about as much as reverb these days. So if you've got a good quality delay, you can get away with it, especially if the bass tone is really good. And that those Marshalls are savage, I reckon. If I was going to get a Marshall, it'd be that one.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, Doc, if you ever want to borrow it, man.
Okay.
I reckon we sort Rick out in a weekend or two. We'll track one down.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I remember bringing it to the jam one night and blowing my speaker.
Oh, really?
Awesome. Which is awesome. Yeah, I did. I've blown two speakers at that jam now.
I don't remember you blowing one with them. I might not have been there that night, maybe, with the Marshall. I remember you having it there because I did film like a clip of you doing some stuff.
Oh, yeah. So that was the night that I blew the speaker.
Oh, wow. I don't even remember.
Yeah, I remember, like, I think the last set, I was like, oh, my, this, it feels squishy. Like, there's so much compression. And then I got home and then just fired it up in the morning and it sounded weird. And then I opened the speaker and it was the cornet fused. It wasn't moving at all. Like, what you get when you put a 100 watt Marshall head into a 100 watt speaker. You would think that that's fine, but it's not.
No, it needs to be overrated, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's a question I always get. Can I put like a 150 watt speaker in a 100 watt amp? And I'm like, yeah, that's perfect. Or even a 150 watt speaker in a 50 watt amp is also great. You're not going to have any problems there. It does power it fine. So
yeah, somebody said to me that it should be double. You know, if it's like a 100 watt head, you should have a 100 watt speaker. If you're using a 1x12. Which is what the EVs are, and I have an EV. I've since got my EV repaired to use with that Marshall head.
That sounds reasonable, especially if it's a valve. If it's a transistor, don't worry. Just get any speaker you can find.
Here's the question. Hey, you were out the front watching for a set last night, Rick, when Ryan and I were playing, and then I was listening to you guys. And I mean, you were playing an amp that wasn't an amp, so we'll get to that in a moment. But I listened back to that video you filmed, and I thought the PV Bandit with no pedals held up pretty good to the to Ryan's $47,000 rig. How did you hear it?
Hey, no comprende. No
English. Speaking English.
Well, certainly you could hear it in the room. Look.
I'm going to convert you, man. Come on.
Yeah, well, look, I guess we all have sort of tonal preferences that we have. And, I can just hear a certain 3D-ness or a touch response in tube amps that I don't hear as well in solid state amps, but that's just me. My ears are just painted on anyway. So, but no, certainly as far as keeping up in the volume department, it's not a drama.
Yeah,
cool.
I think I did say to Shane at one point, like, you know, when I've been really digging his Marshall amp.
Yeah.
And I said to him, you play differently when you play with your Marshall and your Bandit. And I think, I thought it's because, you know, the Bandit is much more immediate. Like there's no sort of sag.
Yeah.
I think
you should have a look at the videos if you play in that Marshall, because when you play the Marshall, you do this.
Yeah, you get into it, man.
You do. You get the shoulders going.
You do get into it. That gig that we did.
Yeah.
Was that Friday?
Yeah, last Friday. Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh, Rick, I wish you were there, dude. Like, the tone he was getting from his Marshall was cooking.
It was good. I mean, look, to be honest, I actually prefer it over the PV.
Oh!
I do prefer it over the PV.
You heard it here first, people.
Yeah, but
we need to
the difference in feel, the Bandit's actually a lot of fun to play. It really does feel good. Because it's one of those just plug and play amps, and that's kind of what I love about it. It might not have the oomph of the Marshall, but you know, for $150, it was one of the better sounding amps in the room. There's no doubt about it, even compared to some of the more expensive ones that were there from a couple of the other guys. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I just really love that drive channel. It just feels good to play, especially with the speaker upgrade too. I guess that's probably a big part of the difference. But yeah, so, I mean, what amp were you playing again last night, Rick?
It was a vintage
1960.
I was just adjusting the triode pentode switch. All right, it was a Line 6 Helix LT. All right, plugged straight into the PA. I had my girl's underpants on underneath, you couldn't tell, but yeah, it was. And I don't quite know what possessed me to bring it up there, but I've been fiddling around with a few presets and thought, here, I'm ready to unleash these on an unsuspecting audience.
I tell you what, man, honestly, that thing kills the Mustang. No, it's a no-brainer at the front. I never ask you to turn up. Every time you've taken that Mustang, it's just like, it's just not there.
No. You haven't heard the firmware upgrades in the Mustang. Every preset now has got a flanger on it, and it sounds awesome.
Nice.
If you want to, you can play any song you want as long as it's Barracuda and it rocks.
I just want to tell the guys that are watching this, there was a night that Rick bought the Mustang up. And Shane installed the Mustang app, and mid-song.
So you can, sorry, go ahead.
No, it was just the funniest thing ever.
I hacked his amp. Yeah. There's no security on it, just Bluetooth direct. So if you see anyone playing a Fender Mustang with Bluetooth capability, install the app and just change it to, you know, shred metal in the middle of a blues solo. They'll love it. So we had a couple of questions. We had what valves would I recommend, or would we recommend in a Vox AC15? Did you ever own a Vox, Rick?
No, I didn't, but I've had EL84 amps before. I had a Boogie that it. My first Boogie actually was a Studio 22, and it had a pair of EL84s. As far as valves, look, I've had no dramas with JJ Tesla valves. They're kind of a bit boring, but they're pretty reliable, and they sound okay. But have you got any other thoughts on EL84s, either of you?
I was going to say exactly the same thing. Any of like the PV Delta Blues, or when I think I had to replace one valve in the AC30. I think it was that amp. I could be wrong, but yeah, the JJ is the way to go, because they're not that expensive either. And like you said, they're pretty reliable.
Yeah, I think, yeah, for me, I go JJ. What are the other brands?
Like Electro-Harmonix
TAD is great. Tube Amp Doctor, I think. Yeah. TAD. But I love TAD, like, because TAD comes with all the Turok amps, right? And they, and I don't know if they recommend it, but they come with all the Turok amps. And I had a friend who was an amp tech, so, and he used to stock TAD. So when he stopped, he went into something else, and I got, you know, like a whole box of TAD tubes, and it's great. And JJ's, for me, I love how they sound. I just don't think they're reliable, though. But that's just me. Like, so the Morgan that I have came with JJ's, and so when they died, I was like, oh, I'll put another pair of JJs. And then it lasted 6 months.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's interesting. Yeah, mine never had problems with them. So it might have just been, you never know with that sort of stuff. I think, you know, they, you just, yeah, you never can tell with yeah. valves, but I guess it's all dependent on. So the consensus is pretty much JJs or maybe not.
Yeah, but they sound great. And I know this is dumb, right? But like I put in other brands, and to me, to my ears, right? This is when it gets dangerous when you say stuff like this on YouTube.
Wait a minute, I just go get a cork to sniff. Wait a minute.
to my ears, I think the JJs in that amp, that particular amp, sound the best. So I've just gone and got like four pairs of the tubes. So like if they die, I'll just put them back in.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
So what, John's called you Rick Jagger. we had a question from Sean. Says, do you know Charlie Lim?
Ah, yes. And I think Zaidi Hamid as well. Yep. He is a friend, he's a really good friend of mine. So Charlie Lim and I did the jazz course at Monash University together. That's where we met. And we're both from Singapore originally, but we met in Melbourne. And you know, he's since then, you know, he's one of my best friends. He was the best man at my wedding. And I recorded I think I'm in almost all of his albums, I think.
Yeah,
I'm definitely in the first like two albums or EPs. And I used to tour with him, and then he sort of he got big in Asia, so he moved to Singapore, and now he just got signed by Universal Music, which is awesome for him.
Yeah, cool.
And he's left me behind.
Has he?
No, he hasn't. No, he was just recording. So I see him all the time.
Cool.
But yeah, what a great singer, great songwriter.
He's got some pretty serious endorsements too, hasn't he?
Yeah,
can we talk about that?
Yeah, we can. So he's got a Turok endorsement, which is how I've managed to get some of my Turok amps. He's also got a Fender endorsement.
Is that a printer?
It is.
That's all right. I got the mic thing. That's all right.
I've got a Target endorsement for my shirts.
Now you're sponsored by Roots Canada, man.
Yeah, it's true. Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Roots means something different in Canada than it does in Australia. People always go, roots, roots. And anyway, it's a Canadian thing.
We had a question from Vintage Ale. Thoughts on Collings guitars? Are they worth the price?
Yes, in my opinion. I think they are. Mm-hmm. Like I played like five, and all five were amazing. And I have an electric. I've got a i35 and a acoustic from Collings, and they're both great. Definitely check them out. They're very expensive though. Like I think.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah,
I remember when I was in Florida last year doing those demos at Jerry's. I picked up a few. And had a play and did some demos, and they were really great. I really loved the one with the two mini humbuckers. It was great, but already sold. It was the one that I liked a lot, and it was already on hold, so I was spewing. But they're probably one of those brands you might want to look at used. Like the new price for them is just ridiculous. Like most guitars, you find them, a third of the price secondhand. So,
I think. My take on the Collings for what it's worth is that because the quality control out of, can we say Gibson, is a bit hit and miss. If you want a top range double humbucker guitar with the stop tailpiece and the tunematic bridge and the three aside, I think that's sort of up in that territory, a really beautifully made guitar. And you know, professional grade, lots of touring guys use it. I think it's Charlie Sexton's main guitar now.
Yeah,
he can play anything he wants, and
that's right.
It just works well. So
yeah, cool.
That's where they sort of are in that end of the market. And to see Kirk Fletcher playing Ryan's guitar when he came in here last year was incredible. It just sounded $1 million. Obviously, he could play a Samick and it would sound awesome. But for him just to say, "Hey, I got one like this at home," it was amazing to see him take it and just make the sweetest sounds out of it. It was incredible. And whatever he asked of it, it delivered in spades. It was great. Yeah. So, your ears tell you what you need to hear.
Sorry.
And the cool thing when, like, Kirk Fletcher, when I spoke to him about it at the end of the night, he said, I was like, I hope, because it was my guitar and I loaned it to him for the gig, and we hadn't changed any of the settings for him. So I was a bit worried about that, because obviously, I said to him before the gig, like, do whatever you want. And I even asked him, what gauge strings, but we use the same gauge. And he said, what's so cool is every time he just picks up a Collings, it's the same. He expects a lot, and it is like, it's always great. And I think that's the thing about Collings. When you pick one up, it's so hard to find a flaw on it.
Like the Duesenbergs are like that.
Duesenberg as well. Super high quality.
I was going to say, Bigfoot in Germany says, speaking of amps, this was earlier, what's your thoughts on Pearl amps as opposed to be Fender clones? I don't know if I have ever really seen them anywhere in Australia, Pearl amps.
Pearl?
Yeah.
I remember seeing them advertised years ago in sort of old guitar magazines.
He says they're Japanese-made amps, but I don't know.
Yeah, so I think it'll be like a clone. They looked, from memory, they looked a bit like Silver Faces. So
yeah, that's what he says, sorry, Fender clones. But, yeah. That was it. So, yeah, I mean, I know they're effects pedals. I got to demo some vintage Pearl effects, and some of those were the best I got to test. Like, they got them right in the early 80s or 70s or whenever they came out. But, I don't know. But, yeah, I don't think I've ever seen these around.
Yeah, I think back in the 70s and the 80s, that's when Japan was obsessed with making dead-on copies of American thing, so they're probably gonna be beautifully built and engineered, but I've never played one, so I can't really say much more than that.
Yeah, I've actually never. I mean, I've heard of Pearl and that they're copies, but I've never heard one or played one.
Here's a good question. Oh, sorry, Ryan. I thought you were done.
No, I was done. Yeah.
That's all right. I just didn't mean to cut you off.
When you we finish, just can we talk. Just say over?
Yeah.
Alex. You just shut Alex.
Just watch Smokey and the Bandit if you don't get that reference, folks. Greatest movie ever. Someone said, let me find this. Do Collings guitars come with a slippers, pipe, and a smoking jacket? No, actually, where's the actual question here? What are your preferences for neck shape? I mean, I know the answer to this, but thin necks or fat necks, C-shape or V? That's from Sean Reed.
Should I go? Fat necks for me, for sure. I just love the Tele, the 51 Nocaster, I guess, is one of my favorites. And on like a 59 sort of reissue fat neck as well. Love that stuff. I find on a fat neck, I don't know what it is, but it just feels more substantial and you know, when I just love the feel of that neck. I don't know what it is. Yeah. And speaking of V-necks, I actually don't like V-necks. I don't know why. But I like Fender necks.
I had a... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was done. I was just saying that I like V-necks, you know, but I can't get used to V-necks.
Yeah, I actually had a guitar made for me, a mate of mine's luthier, and for his 100th guitar, he made me a guitar, but he didn't ask me what I wanted in the neck. So it was quite a sharp V, similar to the Kleppo shape. And I thought, I'll probably get used to it. But I ended up getting this weird sort of tendonitis just around around my ulnar styloid for the anatomists amongst us. And it was because it sort of made me play in a kind of weird hand posture. So I reluctantly returned the guitar to him, and he said, oh, I can make another neck. But I just said, no, this is a guitar that, you know, you built the body and built the neck, and they're meant to be together. So he sold it to someone else. But, yeah, my preference is for either the No-Caster U or the Big C, lots of wood to fill that sort of that part of your hand there. Mm-hmm. And I can just sort of feel the guitar resonate through the neck. And a guitarist who's probably been the biggest influence on all us three, Yngwie Malmsteen. One of his
him and Billy Ray Cyrus, they're the two.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, he said that because he's forever switching necks and guitars, and that he says the tone goes with the neck. So I wouldn't argue with that. I think that a lot of the tone comes from the neck and a nice sort of tight neck joint and all that sort of gear. So, I like it big. Probably my favourite neck is the one that Ryan hypnotised me and stole my guitar. And it's on that telly. It's just almost ridiculously big, but it really does contribute to the tone and the feel, definitely.
Like, they call that one the baseball bat neck, I think, something like that. That huge thing. Yeah, for me, it's 50s necks. I mean, back before I even, because being a left-hander, it was always the same thing. You could only ever find the same two guitars everywhere for years. Mm. But once, I, as soon as I got this, I was converted to a bigger neck. This is like a 50s sort of profile. And I just remember how great, like, it just felt better to play. I got big hands too. And I think that's part of it, but even with my my Tokais and the Gibsons I've had over the years, I've always tried to get ones. Well, not always, but my favorite ones were always the ones with the 50 style neck, and that's what that's got as well. The neck on that's pretty comparable to the Fender in terms of its, you know, how it sort of fits in your hand. So, how about a shout out for us lefty Aussies? There you go, man. I'll give you a shout out. That's Outlaw Wickenbacker. Rickenbacker, sorry, spelt differently. Outlaw. Oh, no, it's not. I misread that. It is spelt right. Anyway, there we go. Our Metal Stage podcast, welcome. We've got Tremonti as well. He says, could you please explain how the neck on your PRS feels? So the one that I've got, which is the SE, has a thin neck. So it's kind of like a modern Fender neck in terms of its how thin the actual neck is, but it's slightly wider. And usually I wouldn't go for a neck that's thin, but the guitar plays itself. So it really feels easy to play, and that's the benchmark for me. I'll make exceptions on guitars if I like everything else about them and they're easy to play. So it kind of reminds me of a modern C-shaped neck that's wider slightly. But that's about it. I know Rick's in the PRS club now. What about yours, man?
Yeah, so I think it's I think they call it the pattern thin neck as well, but it doesn't feel thin like a say an Ibanez or Jackson or those sort of shredder type guitars. It's not as big as a No-Caster Big U, but it certainly feels comfortable. It doesn't feel like you know, I'm playing some sort of shred thing. But I've sort of grown accustomed to it. Look, I've been a PRS
detractor.
I have for the longest time.
Yeah, me too.
I've always just thought, oh, they can't decide whether they're a Gibson or a Fender, so they sort of straddle this middle ground and sound like a compromise between the two.
Yeah.
You know, Ryan, I think you and I were talking the other day that, you know, for me it was when David Grissom went to PRS and spent years and years developing that guitar, the pickups and whatnot, it really made me take notice because I've loved David Grissom for a long, long time. You know, he's been the consummate side man and just all about the tone for him. It's I'm sure he wouldn't get up on stage unless his tone was absolutely dialed in. So nothing else matters to him more than the tone.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that sort of opened the and then when you gave me that your Grissom guitar to use for New Year's Eve,
it was
a bit of an epiphany. So yeah, I still struggle with some of the the cosmetics of it. The headstock is still kind of
it looks great on you, man. Don't worry about it.
when I look at it, it's just it's a bit pointy, but
you're a product of the 80s, man.
Yeah, well, that's true. I used to have I had a Jackson headstock. Yeah, it looked like yeah, it looked like the guitar that Jeff Beck used in there's a song called Ambitious from the 80s, and so it had three single cores, Floyd Rose, and it was a great guitar actually. But, the PRS I've definitely come around to as far as being able to get, you know, tones that I really enjoy, sort of brighter tones, good rhythm tones that I thought you just couldn't get out of a double humbucker guitar. So it's been an interesting journey these last few months with it, and it stays in tune and it just does all the things. It's just, I just had to get my head around it.
You're turning into a bit of Jeff Beck too, I noticed, mate. You got that whammy bar in your hand a lot. It's you were rocking out last night, man. It was awesome.
Yeah, I even have it in my hand when I don't have it with a guitar. I just sort of walk around with it, man.
No, that's not the whammy, man. Oh, no.
I thought you said this is a family show.
It is. So, hang on, we've got to give a shout-out here to Cheddar Kung Pao. He used the super chat. He donated $10. So thanks for that, man. He says it's for the PRS T-shirt fund contribution. So we'll split that three ways. So we all get $3.30-something each, and we'll compile it into some PRS shirts. There we go. Or Pepsi Max, one or the other.
Excellent.
Thank you, Cheddar.
Jed is a good man. He's always got some very positive, constructive and encouraging comments. So thanks, Mum. Thanks, Mummy.
I see him everywhere too. Like nearly every video I look at, he's commented. So I'm like, that's cool.
Thank you, man.
So I think John asked earlier, what's the deal with live streams and drama? I was going to say to him, it depends which channel you watch. So
you've got to have drama, man.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
Yeah,
try
to have drama.
Yeah.
Let's get into the dirty goss. No, we'll do that. Dirty goss.
let's see.
Here's a good question.
I just saw there was a question that popped up twice, I think. The best overdrive pedal into a Turok. He has a Studio Pro 50. He's using a Mad Professor Royal Blue, which is a great pedal.
Yeah.
Duck, what are your thoughts on that?
I think the Turok is such a great pedal platform. You really would be hard-pressed, so long as you're using one that gives it a nice little kick through the mid. So, I mean, it's been so long, but I reckon anything from a TS-808 to a TS-9.
Yeah.
I've always loved.
Go back to the bunk standards. They're great.
Oh, no, you know what? It's
it. It works.
It does work. You turn it up nice and loud, and, you know, I'd be absolutely fascinated to get a blindfold test. on all these things. But obviously the Vimiran Jan Ray, I've always loved Into the Two Rock. I think it's a great sound. But there's an overdrive that Ryan and I have been involved with the development of that, you know, I've used exclusively for probably the last 6 months. Yes, that blue one there. And it does things. Yeah. Look, it's designed by a quantum physicist guy who's also a total guitar nerd. And there are some little gremlins and striped doohickeys in there that do interesting things as far as the harmonic content goes. It's so it's, and I didn't buy all that gobbledygook initially until I just used my iPhone to record, playing that one and playing the Jan Ray and play a couple other drives. And then when I listened back, I could finally hear what this the designer was talking about. It almost has this sort of octave following tone. And I just saw a video on the Origin FX Revival Overdrive, and they had this control called ghosting. And I think it's a similar sort of thing where you hear this, it sounds a little bit like an octave, but nowhere near as.
It's like a fat overtone on the thin strings, basically. Is that what you're trying to get at? Like you can feel a bit of extra girth behind the note?
Yeah, you definitely can. And I'm not sure. And he said, it's designed in there, but it's going to be difficult to reverse engineer. So if any bugger buys it, they're going to struggle to see what he's done. And there's also lethal voltages, so if you try and reverse engineer it, you'll be fried. It really is something that we're excited about. It's a two-stage overdrive. You can adjust the boost, et cetera. But, yeah, it works well, and there's been a lot of – my gosh, has it been 5 years, Ryan, do you reckon?
It's been 10 years.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you met Tony, but I used to work at a guitar store, and I remember Tony came in one time, and he was talking to, I had a friend working in the store with me, and Tony just came in with a plastic bag and a circuit board with two output jacks. And it did not have a case on it. And my friend, Sam, who said, this dude designed this pedal, and you know, and he's working on it. And then Sam left the company, and I think I inherited Tony. I think I'm pretty fussy, and I think Dr. Rick and I were both, you know, we both like what we like, and it takes a lot to, you know, to please us, but and Tony stuck through it. So he would come up with a pedal, and we would go, nah, and it needs this, and then he'd get excited and come back. And Doc, I don't know if you remember, so Tony had a pedal that he put into a Joyo.
That's right, an orange one, was it?
Yeah, and it was amazing. It was the best. Like, I love that pedal. There was so much overtones, and I said, "Oh my god, this is the holy grail." And Tony was like, "Okay, well, this is the one," and that he's gonna make all of the pedals from. And then he wired one, and he gave one to me, and I think he gave one to you, and I was like, "It's not the same pedal. It doesn't sound the same."
Yeah.
And then he went back, and finally we have this. Like, I have, so this is the final production, and this was a hand wired one that I got before this.
Yeah.
And I think Rick, you've got one as well. And it was he did some R&D, and I think he's got it. Like, in my opinion, I think when you played it. So, sorry, to answer that dude's question, my favorite pedal into a two rock is is and maybe was a Janray. Like, it's still on my board. Like, I have a Janray here. Like, you know, I love how the Janray sounded. And for a long while, like, Tony would try to knock that pedal off my board, and he couldn't do it. And he hasn't really done it yet. Like, it hasn't knocked off my board. But last night, this was the only pedal I had on the whole night.
Yeah,
because it wasn't really sounding that good, man. No, I'm messing with you.
Actually, you know what? It's actually designed to stack really well with
the
Janray. So whenever Tony sees my board, he says, why don't you put the Janray after the Over Unity and hear how it goes? And I say, why don't you go and jump in the lake? But no, I will change him around and just see how it goes. But
I've got a few people asking you what the brand is and stuff, and I'm pretty sure that there's no website available yet for these.
It's going to be there within the next month or two. They're just sort of getting that organized. It's you and me, Over Unity. Basically, Over Unity means that whatever you put in, you get a little bit more out too. So, it's certainly been a long time coming, and I really like it. It just does what it says. And look, it's got probably a couple too many knobs on it for me. I like a pretty simple sort of thing, but it's pretty much set and forget. So, watch this space. We'll certainly let you know when it's available commercially.
I had a Turok Studio Pro 22 for probably about a year, something like that. I think the pedal I liked the most in it was an odd sort of match for it. It was the Plimsoll, the full-tone Plimsoll.
Oh, right.
That was cool. I think I also had the Klon on my board back then as well, the red one. So, yeah, I can't really recall exactly what pedal I had going into it. I was swapping and changing around quite a bit back then. We had a good question here from Dylan. I think Ben's got to go. So have a good night, Ben. Thanks for stopping in. Dylan says, is there a guitar that you loved at first but grew to hate?
You guys go. I have one.
Go for it.
I had a Troussard, James Troussard guitar. It was a metal body. And it was a Les Paul shape. And I pretty much got that without trying it. And that was kind of dumb because I never usually do that. But I think I was in love with the idea of having a Troussard because all the Troussards that I had played were great. Great necks, sound great. So there's a local collector guitar player, which, you know, I think Rick and I know who we both know. And he had that guitar and he was looking for a trade. And I think there was an amp that I was not using and he was interested in. And we did the swap and I had only seen photos of it. And the night that I got it, I was like, took it out the case, I went, oh man, it did not feel good. Like, I think all the frets were worn out. It needed a new nut. And so, but I got all the work done. So I put like a new nut in and I got it, I got fret leveled. And I had it for a little while and then I just never bonded with it. And I think it's because of the fact that, you know, like I'm really, like I love my Gibson Les Paul, and it was a Les Paul shape, so it was like when you can only play one, right? So I'd always just go for my Gibson.
I've got a few that I could think. Oh, sorry. Keep going. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, sorry. I was just gonna say a friend of mine came over, picked it up, and was like, "Dude, I gotta have this guitar," and it belongs to, like it's with him now. You know, and he loves it so. It worked out.
I can think of a couple. The most recent one would have to be that Maton Master Sound electric guitar that I got. I loved that when I first got it. I still like the bridge pickup on it, but I found the neck pickup, this is one of those things you don't know until you play live. Like, the neck pickup sucked in a live situation. It sounded okay on its own in single coil, sort of, so it's like a single coil strap pickup, but it looks like a humbucker. I just never, it was like I had to avoid that pickup, and that kind of ruined the whole guitar because I'm more of a neck pickup player than I am a, you know, a bridge pickup guy. The other one that I can think of in recent times was that big Epiphone acoustic guitar that I got, the Jumbo. I'm not the tallest guy. You guys are about a foot and a half taller than I am. So for a short ass, I loved it. I mean, visually it looks good. It sounded okay, but having to reach over a large body to strum, it got old really, really quickly. And that kind of ruined my enthusiasm to play it because I was actually getting a sore arm or a sore shoulder just from having to sort of reach way further forward. Like my arm would sit out more instead of sitting down more. So for me, those were the two that, you know, that I thought I was going to love. But yeah, I flipped them, unfortunately.
Is that right?
Basically brand new. So what about you, Rick?
Well, as you will recall, when we went to Wilded Music to try out the Super Amps and I saw that postmodern Strat, I wasn't even looking for a Strat. And I picked it off the wall and played it. And, you know, well, yeah, the rest is history. We got it and bought it. And, you know, I did love it for a good long while, but it just all of a sudden, I could never get the sounds out of it that other Strat players could, which is bizarre because I've played Strats for like 20 years. but ever since I got into my Telecaster kind of fetish thing where I use the bridge backup on the Tele, it's steely and bitey, but for me it's got all the power. And then all the neck pickups on my Tele sound like a Strat neck pickup. They've got that real lovely sort of hollow sound. It's just great. And I could never get a Strat bridge pickup to work for me. The in-between sounds, I could never solo one for some reason. They all sounded a bit muffled.
You need to wear one of those Knopfler headbands. That's how that happens. It's part of the tone.
When your head's as big as a melon, you can't get those. I need to buy, like, big underwear and just cut off the elastic strap and put it on. But, I just think, well, in the Tele, I just used bridge, neck, bridge, neck, occasionally middle if I want to get, that sort of funky rhythm sound. So, you know, I think my, I just sort of fell out of love with Strats and, I would still pick one up and have a play of it, but just for me, I just keep coming back to the Teles, well, until very recently with the Paul Reed Smith. So, yeah, that's probably the only one. And I wouldn't ever say I hate it. I love what other people do with Strats. I just can't seem to do it.
Hmm. All right, we have an interesting question here from Scott Miller from the Bay Area. He says, good morning from the Bay Area. Have you ever tried to convert a Hammond organ amp? I think he means to say, have you ever tried a converted Hammond organ amp with guitar? I think that's what he's getting at. I haven't.
I've seen a video of somebody playing one and it sounded really good, but I've not. I don't know. Is there a company that do them that I'm unaware of?
I don't know. I think some people are saying like maybe playing through like an actual Leslie speaker. I think that's what he's kind of getting at, possibly something like that, but.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
I mean, I've seen inside Hammond organ amps, and there's valves everywhere, man. So
yeah, well.
I can't imagine that it wouldn't sound awesome. It would just weigh a freaking ton, and you need some roadie guy to carry it around for you. But look, I'm happy enough to stick with purpose-built guitar amps, so long as they're boutique and wonderful.
Cheddar says, where was it? It just scrolled. Sufferers of the giant head syndrome unite. Dr. Rick, I can't buy regular size hats either.
No, I know. I buy any hat. It looks like a pimple on a pumpkin. It's like, it's just not going to fly. So, yeah, it's nasty. I think my mother was in a wheelchair for about a year after she had me. good on you, Chad.
All right. Where was another question here? Get yourself a Nashville tally. Best of both worlds. That's what Sean is saying, Rick.
Remember I got one of them. Remember I had one, and I couldn't see the side dot markers on the fretboard. Oh,
yeah, that's right.
I was making even more mistakes than I usually do, Pookie, which is, you know, a shit ton anyway. But, yeah, I know what you mean. But here's the beef. On a Nashville telly, you can't get bridge and neck simultaneously. Yeah. Unless you get some sort of switching doodad thingy. So, I was watching a video the other day. Oh, can we mention PRS Silver Sky? Oh.
No. Everyone will go. I think all the crybabies have moved on.
Okay. Well,
I think we're good.
The middle pickup on that sounds quite usable. Look, Ryan and I were talking about it the other day, and we said, look, until we actually have one and play one, how can you
four days away?
How can you have an opinion on it? You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
They're 4 days away. I know when they.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, hang in there.
Can you do a video?
Yeah, we can do that. Absolutely.
Are you serious?
Yeah, Andrew, let me know. So, they'll have them in.
Okay. Now, don't tell anyone where they are, though.
No. Here, here we go. We've got Tim from Ohio. He says, have you tried the OLP Ernie Ball Axis style guitars? I think I took this question the other day, actually. I haven't personally tried one because I haven't seen a lefty anywhere, but they're kind of like the budget Ernie Ball guitars, but they actually look pretty good, but never picked one up. I don't know if either of you guys have ever played an OLP Ernie Ball.
So I just want, like, I don't know if it's the guys that do it, but there was a company that had the parts made in Japan or like in Asia and then assembled them in the US factory. Is that OLP? Is that?
Yeah, I don't know if they're, yeah, I don't know enough about them. I used to see them at a local, I don't know if you ever saw my Guitar Search Saturday at that Harvey Norman Best Buy's place.
Oh,
it was
Yeah,
they had them in there and they were like blowing them out really cheap.
Yeah.
And I told Carla, you got to check these out. These look really, really good. And unfortunately, the shop shut. You know, I think kind of interested in checking them out. But
I tell you what, the Ernie Ball Axis is a great guitar. If I saw one with the two P90s in it, I reckon I would be sorely tempted. I think of all the Van Halen guitars, I think the Music Man Axis is the best one. They just felt really ergonomic. It was a big neck too, unfinished. They work well. They're no frills guitar, just well built. So if you're into sort of, I think they're sort of more for heavy rock and that sort of stuff, aren't they? I don't think there'd be too many blues guys playing one of them, but certainly a really good quality instrument, well designed.
That's a good segue into the next question. Oh, sorry, Rick, unless you want to add more to that, I don't mean to cut you off.
No, I'm done.
Cool.
just to touch on that, but like Shane, you and I were talking about Music Man guitars last night.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're great guitars, you know, like they're not very
totally.
Expensive. They sound good and they play great. I might be wrong, like, but I think they're really underrated. Like,
absolutely. I've told Brian a number of times his best Strat tone's that Music Man. He always plays better on it, and he plays great anyway. So, it's got a sound, man. And the best ones I played at Jerry's were was that Super Sport, Axis Super Sport guitar with the P90s that Rick was talking about. Just a killer, absolute killer.
Yeah.
So it's great. So, guys, if you're enjoying the live stream, please give it a thumbs up. We've got a few people here already. Well, not already, but we've still got a few people here, which is great. So that would be awesome. We had a question from, let me just find my comment, from Rummy73. He says, thoughts on Mesa amps or Mesa boogies, however you want to say that, Mesa boogie.
I don't know. Okay. Well,
you go first, Rick, on this one.
I reckon Mesa boogie were probably the first sort of high profile boutique amp maker. I remember back in the probably mid 80s, the Steve Lukather Hot Licks video came out, and you know, I was totally into that. And that's, he was using boogie heads as an overdrive unit, so turning the boogie head up to 10 and then taking a slave out into a big power amp. And so boogie was the pinnacle of you know, boutique amp design. I've had three or four boogies, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, so the first one I got was Studio 22, which is exactly the same as Carlin's got.
I love it. You know what? That's the best one I've heard, I reckon.
Yeah, you won't hear a 21 amp sound as big and huge as that anywhere. It was a great amp, but and then I ended up getting a Mark I reissue, which is the Santana amp.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was great. It's a 100-watt combo. And yeah, everything looks shoehorned in, this huge, big 6L6, you know, a quartet of them, and like six 12A7s. And it was a great amp, but, you know, I had this 60 Strat at the time, and it just didn't sound good through it. And in retrospect, I wish I'd tried other guitars through it, because I reckon it was great. I ended up trading it for something else, and, you know, it's one of the many dumb things I've done. That was a really good sounding. Yeah, it was great. You just sort of had it on the verge of breakup, kick it over with an overdrive, was great. So I don't even know if they still reissue that. Obviously, the boogies I think about now are like the triple rectum fryer and the stiletto and the transatlantic and all these sorts of things. You know, I've plugged into them and had a play, but they just don't have that warmth and touch response. They've got, you know, preamp gain forever. You can really crank it up and get that real sort of high gainy sound. But, I guess that modern heavy drive sound for me, I have no real use for. But beautifully built. You have to buy boogie valves too, because the bias is fixed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Randall Smith is, you know, like most designers, very opinionated, and he just says that having to adjust the bias is somehow a compromise. And so if you just keep buying overpriced boogie valves, then you're right. So, look, each to their own. Obviously, the triple rectifier thing is an intense sort of heavy sort of sound. And if you play, you know, heavy rock or metal or whatever. I guess for years the Metallica sound was boogie, real sort of hairy sort of sound. But, for the sort of music I guess that we play, I don't really have a use for that sort of tone.
So when we're doing like Sweet Home Alabama, we just don't need that sort of, you know, we don't need that sound.
Oh, that's a good point. We'll probably do that. For that one. Yeah,
but, I've never owned a boogie. I've played through a few. The best memory I have of one is Carlitz. I love that 20. Is it 22 watt? Is that what you said it was?
Yeah.
Great little rock and roll amp. You know, just turn it up loud, and it doesn't need pedals. In terms of just you're good to go. And you know, if you're playing a Les Paul, it's just a great match. I don't think you can really beat that. Have you got any boogies, Ryan?
I used to have boogies, but back in the day when I used to play, like, you know, heavier music, So I've had three boogies. I've had a, my first one was a rack unit. It was a tri-axis and the Studio 290. I
was wow.
A big dream, yeah, I was a big, big dream.
Simul class.
Simul class, yeah, that's the one.
Wow.
And that was the, that was my amp. It was like my dream amp, and I saved up, you know, so much for it. And I was, yeah, I was going to say as well, like, I think for me, Master Boogie was the first, like, mainstream boutique guys. Like, there were Matchless and other companies before them, but they really, I mean, when I was growing up and, you know, learning guitar, they were the guys that, like, it was my dream amp. So I had the tri-axis, and I loved it. And I was playing in a Dream Theater cover band, but it was the most heaviest setup that I've ever had. And then I had that, and then I bought a dual rectifier because yeah, back then I was, you know, I did a lot of rock stuff and like the Dream Theater stuff. And then I sold them both to buy a
house.
No. I had stopped being in you know, a Dream Theater cover band, and I was playing more blues and more rock stuff. So I got Fender stuff and I got Marshall stuff. And then the one amp that I have, which is about 10 years ago when I moved to Australia, it was one of the first amps that I own here, was the Mark II C Plus. Which is a cool amp, 60 watts, really loud, beautiful cleans, but really, really heavy. And I can't remember why I didn't use that amp a lot. I remember buying it and I loved it for the first maybe 6 months, and then kind of just used other stuff. Like, I think I was more into Fender combos, which were much more lighter. And then traded it with, like, for a guitar or something. Yeah,
go ahead, you're right, just cut me off, you're fine.
Oh, sorry, man.
No, I'm not being sarcastic, just go for it.
I just think Mess is, you know, really well built.
I do this test where after they built the amp they throw it down a flight of stairs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And there's all this other sort of surge protection. They're sort of over engineered because Randy Smith builds hot rod cars. So he has that similar sort of aesthetic in the design. It just they're absolutely built like brick shit houses. They're amazing. But I guess, you know, our tastes in tone change and whatnot. So I remember they made an amp. Sorry, last thing on the boogie. They made an amp called a Blues Angel, and it had this progressive linkage thing where you had two 6V6s and a quartet of EL84s, and you could switch the power from just the 6V6s to just the EL84s to both. And so you had the sort of nice warm bottom end of the 6Vs. And the chimey top end of the EL84. So that was kind of a cool amp, but it disappeared.
A bit like that, the Egg Beater that I bought. Remember that thing?
Oh, that was good. I mean,
it would have sounded way better through a better box. I made the mistake in probably trying it through a better cabinet. We got an interesting question here for you guys. Where is it? Sorry, guys. Marcel asked if we'd ever tried an amp. Let me just paste his question in. Here we go. Marcel says, has anyone encountered an amp with EF86 and 6L6 combination valves?
EF86. That's like
he says he's building a prototype.
Oh wow.
So he expecting it to be clean. I don't yeah.
So EF86 is like a matchless preamp tube, isn't it? So and I think Dr. Z uses EF86s in a few of his amps as well.
Yeah.
I've heard that they're a great sounding tube, but they're a bit notorious for being unreliable. And If a preamp tube starts whistling or doing some weird stuff on the gig, then you kind of, you could be stuffed. But I think it would be a great voicing, and then the 6L6 power stage would, you know, just be nice and big and warm and round and girthy. So, you know, I certainly wouldn't sneeze at it if there was a way of making the F86, you know, reliable. I think that the F86 might be in like the Route 66 amp. I'm not 100% sure, but, yeah, certainly, yeah, a great sounding preamp tube, but something a bit different, completely different from a 12AX7.
There it is. Yeah, I don't know enough about those to comment, so I thought you guys might know a bit more about it.
I've owned a Matchless Clubman, which, you know, had a EF86 in it, and but, you know, it had EL34s, I think, in them, so it's hard to say what they'll sound like with 6L6 power tubes. But for the, I mean, I just remember that amp being really bright. Like, it's a really bright sounding amp, as Matchless, most Matchlesses go. But yeah, it could be cool. Like, I think that, I've heard the same thing that Dr. Ricks just said, that they're not really reliable.
Yeah. One of the guys in the chat said, Kevin says, EF86s can be very microphonic. They almost have twice the gain of a 12AX7 in theory.
So. Well, there you go. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hey, Rummy73 just dropped $2 in the super chat. So
awesome.
There you go, guys. We can make it $3 each by the end of this. If we, nah, thanks, Rummy. I appreciate that. It's always good having you.
And thank you everyone for watching, man. This is great. This is so cool. Like, you know, the three of us are sitting at home and we're chatting about guitars, and they're like 85 men watching us. Wait.
Yeah.
No, it's cool.
It must be like a Dream Theater cover band gig.
That's right.
I think I remember that band. Was it called Ryan and the Bag of Dicks?
Ryan takes a bag of dicks. That's what it's called.
Awesome.
All right, here's a nice request. Second Chord Jam says, how about a video of you three guys jamming? So I don't know if we've actually got a video of us all playing at the same time. At least I know I've got stuff with Rick. We've got like about, I don't know, 1,900 hours of video footage of us jamming. And then I've got probably some footage with Ryan and I jamming, even from last night that Rick posted on his channel, RSELP. I'll type that in. You can listen to how bad I sing. And, but I don't think we've got a clip of us all playing together. Could I be wrong with that, Rick? Or?
Remember when we did the live stream at Sky?
Yeah, that was on Facebook. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Oh, Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah.
Well, you see, I think I'm so intimidated by Ryan that when we all jammed together, I ended up just playing, you know, just crap, you know. So
you play like that anyway, Rick. You just got to go easy on yourself, man.
I can't let that go, man. I can't let that go. Dr. Rick is one of the most amazing guitar players I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And he has thought, you know, he has shown me so much stuff. And one of the coolest thing about Dr. Rick, and the thing that I've learned from him, is no matter what he does, wherever it is, it could be like just jamming with somebody or just playing by, you know, just playing by himself, he always makes an effort to make it sound good. And you know, like that's awesome. Yeah, he's awesome. And you guys, I don't have to tell YouTube loves Rick.
Yeah, I remember the first time I heard Rick play, I was like, just like this dude comes in a white shirt, he drags in a Fender Bassman into a small pub. No pedals. I've got this on videos from 2002. And it was he just went somewhere else. Everyone else was like looking at their hands, and you know, Rick just shuts his eyes and he went. And between you two guys, Brian and a couple of my other friends, I was like, man, just couldn't ask for a friggin' better guys, better players, you know, like Rick's, you're a freak, man. I watch Ryan play too, and it's disheartening in some ways, because you know physically, like, oh, you might feel the same way, Rick, I don't know, but
yeah, absolutely,
we can't play that like that, but we do our own thing, and your style is so appealing to so many people, Rick. Like, it doesn't get lost in, it's like a meat and potatoes kind of thing, but with a bit more sort of
a bit of spice,
absolutely. So I had to give a shout out to our Space Jazz, far out. This is the Super Chat night of nights here. I don't know what's going on, but he just donated $10. So far out.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Grab a coffee or Pepsi or whatever. Cheers for what you do. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. That's crazy. Yeah.
No, well done. That's great, mate. I mean, I'll talk about this sort of shit forever, man, for free. I don't care.
Yes.
Get someone to listen to me, because you know, my kids will just glaze over and go, oh, damn, just shut up. So it's just nice to, be with like-minded guys who are into it, because, you know, in all seriousness, music is such a hugely important part of my life. It just feeds, it feeds your soul. And, that's why we drive to this bloody pub up in the hills on a Sunday night where, you know, there's some interesting characters there. But just we live for that moment, and there might be just 5 minutes in 4 hours in the whole night where everything's just in their zone, and that just it feeds you till the next time. I guess it's like when you play around a golf, you hit one good shot in 4 hours of misery, and you come back again, and it's the same thing. It just
I'm laughing.
You know what I mean, don't you?
No, absolutely. I was laughing for a couple of reasons, because you were spot on, and you also got a comment here which was just perfect. It's exactly what I was kind of thinking. Joel says, Dr. Rick, colon, you know, semicolon, the man, the legend, the jaw metronome. You get that thing going when you know, this is your foot tapping. You get that. I thought that was kind of funny.
Who is this guy? Find out with this fucking. Oh, sorry, can't say that. Flipping. No, it's right. You know what? One of the double-edged sword of playing with a Shane Diorio band is that you see video footage of yourself. It's like next time, guys, you're taking a dump, set up a webcam and watch yourself. All right? That's what it feels like for me. It's hideous, or as my kids say, hegeous. Anyway, it is awful. I've got sort of used to it, but the novelty never wears off on viewers of the channel. And it's just this terrible subconscious thing. I even do it in my practice room. It's horrible. I promise you, I don't sit in front of a mirror and go, "Oh, that'll get the girls going." I love that.
There's two comments I see about Rick all the time. And, you know, I know Rick can't possibly follow all the comments, but the ones that I see most are, what's with the faces, or I love the faces, and please put some shoes on next time. So, that's awesome.
Yeah, look, I'll get a pedicure so that they're not so offensive. But certainly, it's... You know, I know that people think the guitar face is something that's contrived and practiced and whatnot, but it's not. And I guess I look at other players who look similarly grotesque when they're playing. Obviously, like B.B. King had that, what's that smell face, that thing, and you know, I got that too. But it's just what you do, and for me, it's something sort of. I feel like I don't want to get all spiritual and weird, but I sometimes feel like I'm being played. I'm just a conduit for the demon that's inside that says, I want to play a whole lot of shit notes and you're going to and you've got no control over it. So, yeah, I mean, look, you know, you guys all close your eyes and look like, yeah, you're one stroke away from the bishop stroke. But it's just that's how it is when we're playing the guitar. It's we're not sitting there thinking, oh, how's this going to look? Oh.
I've got a photo of me taken where I look Japanese, man. And I'm not saying that because of my eyes, just like the face contour was just completely like, I was like, do I pull faces like that? It was just crazy, man.
Hang out with Ryan and me, you can't help it become Asian.
It might help my chops. No, it just it cracks me up, some of the, you know, those still photos when you least expect it. It's just like, oh, jeez. Yeah, I'm guilty of that too. If you're feeling it, if you're feeling it and enjoying what's going on around you, I think also, like, I'm guilty of pulling faces if I'm listening to music I love. Like, if I've got a live album of something on that I really dig, man, I'm pulling faces along with the music. I think if you do that, inherently, you're probably going to get there some point on guitar.
Yeah.
At least that's how I kind of see it.
Yeah, no, it's authentic. It's the real deal. It's 100% genuine. And, you know, life isn't a dress rehearsal. You just got to go for it. So, you know, if there's some people who are so cool who always just sort of keep an eye on, you know, an eye in the mirror. Well, each to their own, but, you know, I just want to live an authentic life, and part of that is giving myself over to that moment. So I don't care where it is.
Yeah, and wearing shorts 355 days out of the year. That's awesome. There's some really funny comments here, but I'm not going to read some of them out. But yeah,
comments are great.
Yeah.
It's a barbershop.
Awesome. Oh, yeah, I was going to say too, whenever the day is that we get to 100,000 subscribers on YouTube, which probably will be this year.
Oh, wow.
I was going to get together with both you guys, Dom, Brian, Jeff, and maybe Mark or Richo, and do like a live, you know, just Guitar Fest clip, all mic'd up, maybe in the Tone Cave, if we can wrangle it, and we'll stream it out live. So, yeah, I wanted to see what you guys thought of that. We could just play some blues and have some fun. And
yeah, we just need to get that weird EQ thing in the Tone Cave sorted out. You know how things sound weird? I reckon it's because it's subterranean and it's close to where hell is. And so... weird stuff. Don't you reckon weird stuff happens?
No, yeah, it does. You lose a lot of what you would normally hear is completely different. Either that or we can maybe do it at, like, I don't know, I'll rent the middle room out at Mount Dees or something and see if we can do it there or something like that. But I thought it'd be a cool idea to have us all play, you know.
Yeah.
Might be kind of fun to do an hour live stream, mix and match some guitar players, because no one on the channel has heard Dom. And, I, you know, he's like, he's a really great. I love his slide guitar playing, especially. Yeah,
he's so great.
Just play some funky blues and have some fun.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds ideal. I'll be into that for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I've always, you know, I've thought, like, for something like that, I'd love to do, like, a In the Blues Guitar Festival.
Yeah.
Where, you know, because I remember when we went to the Melbourne guitar show,
mm-hmm.
and just how many people stopped you and Rick.
Rick more than me, but yeah.
And I was just like, oh man, you could feel like a big club with the amount of people who stopped you guys. And it would be great, you know, just to do a gig, invite all the guys who can come. And do a live stream.
Yeah. Someone just asked, would we do it over each of our computers? No, it'd be like we'd all be in a room. I'll hook up a good camera. We'll get a mixer and we'll do it right. I'll have someone sort of probably manage the audio in some headphones. I know logistically how to get this done. So it'd be really, really cool. Did we lose Rick? Is he still there? Yeah. No, there he is. Yeah, you're good. Sorry, it looked like you froze. We've got about 5 minutes left, so if anyone has any last questions.
5 minutes? Are you serious, dude? The time flies.
Oh, wow.
Maybe we can keep going, but I think, you know, 10 o'clock seems like a good time to – an hour and a half is pretty cool. People are asking if we can do more of these coming up. So,
yeah,
whenever, you know, whenever you guys are free, no pressure either.
Yeah.
But someone said Dr. Rick does look like a doctor. So there we go. I thought I'd share that with you, Rick.
Oh, they probably saw my finger. Yeah.
So if you enjoyed the live stream, guys, please give it a thumbs up. Appreciate that. And we'll take a couple more questions here if anyone has them. Someone just said, Jason says, forget GitCon. How about BluesCon? I'll tell you what, if they invite me, I'll send one of these two guys over. You can go hang out over there.
I mean, I wouldn't mind hanging out with, you know, guys like Phil X and... who's that guy? Music is Win?
Tyler? Is that his first name?
Like, just great. And Mick and Dan from The Pedal Show.
Yeah, I love those guys.
Just Henning, it's a bit of an acquired taste. Sorry, is this offensive? Just stop me if it is.
You're right. We'll just leave it there. I mean, I that's the thing with these events. I don't think everyone will like everybody, you know,
we love each other here.
It's just one of those things. I think people would like to see certain people collaborate and possibly not others as well. And in those situations, you kind of almost, you know, you're kind of forced into it in some ways. Possibly. I don't know. I haven't been. But anyway, it's all good.
I've got a question. Compressor first before overdrive. Thoughts? Yeah, that's a really good question. As you know, Shane, that Origin FX compressor that you've got, I loved the sound of that, but I just couldn't work out where it would sort of slot into my my rig. I guess compressors for me always add a bit of hiss, so I would suggest probably putting them after an overdrive, but could that be silly? Could that just amplify the hiss coming out of the overdrive? Yeah, possibly. I don't know. Ryan, have you got any thoughts? Where do you run your compressor?
So it's you know, one of the first things before everything. So like it's the first thing, and then it goes to all the other overdrives. But recently, and I'll bring up this. So this is a board that I just wired, and so the first thing is the shanks to the over unity. So it's kind of I've been playing around with.
It's worth more than my car.
The reason why I've done this is because I do like the sound of having a compressor into an overdrive, which is what it is. But I kind of have started liking the tone of having a drive before the compressor. So this is, I guess, my way of trying it out, which is why I wired this up for last night's jam, and I think it's quite useful, and it's very different. So to answer the question is, try different configurations until you like what you see.
I think inherently, compressors are always flawed, and that's just part of it, unless, of course, you're making the compressor do something very different for whatever reason. But, I would probably put it just before, because you can, like you said, use it. I think you said you use them as a boost occasionally for your solos. Is that how you sometimes use them, Ryan?
Compressors? Sometimes. Really. I guess it depends. Like, usually, so there's a few ways I use compressor. Like, I use a compressor mainly when I do funk stuff, like clean funk stuff. I always like the sound of a compressor, you know, when it's... also, I will use it to tame a crazy overdrive. Like, it sort of just brings everything and makes it sound a lot more, like, neater. And I love using a volume pedal when I do that. So a compressor into a drive and a volume pedal, it sort of gives you that, you know, like, it's a very... I don't want to say this, but like it's almost like a studio sort of recorded guitar sound and control. That's the two ways I use it. But the Cali 76, you know, one of my favorite pedals. You can absolutely use this as a solo boost. The other compressors that I've had in the past, which were, you know, great pedals, but same thing, like, you know, you've turn them on, usually they add a lot of hiss. So I wouldn't usually use them as a boost. Like, I would have them on all the time and then set my gain to that. But with the Cali, it's cool because, you know, the noise floor on this is not very high. So,
yeah.
Very nice.
I've been trying to put my pedal board back together for the last month, but since I got the Marshall, I haven't been using them at all. But I rewatched the Cali 76 video that I did a while back, like a week ago, with that black custom shop Telecaster, you know, the one that I borrowed.
Yeah.
Good God, it sounded good. It was so good. I reckon that's maybe my best video of the, like, at that particular time. Like, it sounded unbelievable. So I got to get that on my board and give it a go live, because there's something to be said for how it feels when you're just playing rhythm stuff, you know. That's... when I'm playing my country and western licks like last night, Rick, it's just you need a compressor in there just to sweeten up those bad notes.
Well, I think so. Unless you've got a valve amp which compresses naturally through the valves, but certainly, I guess a tele into a solid state without compression could be a bit sort of spiky, the transients and all that sort of stuff. But
No. Someone asked earlier if I've ever tried a Red Stripe PV Bandit. I've owned three of them. I think I might have put them on the map. So
I think you have. I think you are single-handedly responsible for the revival
of the Red Stripe Bandits.
It's so, like that question, sort of like, have you ever put your junk in a toaster? But
and these are Rick's clean jokes, by the way. Hang out with these guys. Last night, Rick was pulling out some jokes that I just said, I can't laugh at that. That is so bad.
No, sorry. It's a good point. This is a family show, and we need to maintain decorum.
Yeah. Bigfoot, I'll take this last question. Bigfoot in Germany's asked this a couple of times. What's the difference between the different colored stripe PVs? So essentially, the main differences are, over the years, they introduced the T-Dynamics control. They also introduced more channels on the amp. The cabinet size changed. The speaker changed slightly as well. And every iteration's voice slightly different to the last. The teal stripe ones sound great. They really do. I've played with those before. I never owned one. I think Dr. Rick might have had one once upon a time, but no.
Is that your favorite one, Shane?
I'm sorry?
Is that your favorite one, the blue one?
No, I like the red stripe one the best.
The red stripe. Oh, okay.
Yeah. You can, like, you know how you were talking about the sag, how it doesn't have a lot of sag? That amp actually has a T-Dynamics control, so you can essentially run the clean channel wide open and kind of bring the compression up by turning this dial. And it really does that sort of sound pretty well. But I usually leave it wide open just because of the jam. You want to be as loud as possible. But, I've always liked those. There's just something about them. I really like the teal stripe ones as well, which are the older ones in them. Yeah. And you can pick them up secondhand for nothing. Like, they're, it's just one of those amps. But, I stick by my word with those. I've liked them that much that when I sold one, I regretted it and purchased another one, and I've done that twice. So this is my third. I got it for a bargain, $160 or whatever it was, and I'm going to keep it. That's the plan. If I sell it, I'm going to go buy another one.
You know the definition of insanity, don't you, Shane?
I do, but tell us.
Over and over again and expecting a different outcome.
Just like the strats? Is that how that works?
Hey, I just noticed this great comment that says I might have more in common with Henning than I care to admit, and you know what? Probably right. He's definitely on the blue side of blue as far as his humour goes. But
absolutely.
I'm just hoping my delivery is a bit smoother, but who knows? Maybe not.
You need to get some loud shirts, Rick. That's what we've got to deck you out in, man. Something with a bit of colour.
Okay.
Crazy cat, top or something. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, it is 5 minutes past 10. So
come on. There's people here. We should keep it entertaining, man.
You want to keep going for a few minutes?
Yeah, let's go to 10:30, man.
All right. I tell you what, because I'm happy to do that, but I got to use the restroom. So I'll be right back. You guys keep them entertained. All right.
Yeah, we'll talk about bandits.
Well, have you got a mobile webcam?
I'll bring it with me.
Have you got a solid state toilet or a tube?
Did you ever see, do you know who Kenneth Russell is, the other YouTuber?
Yeah, Kenneth.
We did a live stream with him and he took his phone with him into the restroom thinking it was on mute.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was hilarious.
It was on mute, so you could see him doing it, but you couldn't hear it.
No, you could, nothing was on mute.
Oh,
we pulled him up pretty quick, but I was like, you could hear this. Anyway, I'll tell you about it in a sec. I'll be right back.
I'll tell you what I'll do, Shane. I'll provide the sound effects for you in the bathroom.
Yeah, thanks, mate. I'll be right back. Hang on a sec.
Okay, no worries. So, Ryan, have we got the floor?
We've got the floor.
So he can't hear what we're saying.
He can't. I don't know if he can. But, PV, what are your thoughts? No, that's not good.
Look, folks who are watching, Ryan and I are absolutely dyed-in-the-wool tube Velvamp guys. Yeah. Shane has tried and tried and tried to say, come on, do a blindfold test, whatever. But it's almost not what you hear, it's what you feel when you play the amp and how it responds to you. And I know people say, oh, you wanker, you can't tell the difference. But I guess after wasting my time with this sort of hobby for 35 years, I can just feel it. That's just where we stand. There are trillions and trillions of solid state amps out there, and with musicians playing them and making great music and feeling great, and that's fantastic. I'm not saying to people, hey, you should be playing a Velvamp, because at the end of the day, it's what we feel comfortable on. I mean, Albert King played a solid state amp. I think BB King played the lab amps. That guy from King's X, Ty Timer, I think he played, and it had a crushing sound for him. But just again, for the sound that Ryan and I prefer, it has to be Velvamps just for that. Just for that initial sort of sag and compression and whatnot. He's back.
Line 6 Helix. Sorry.
Yeah, well, they've got bells in them somewhere. Gee, you're quick.
The Mustang.
You're very quick. My 53-year-old prostate makes a trip to the toilet considerably longer than that, Shane.
Oh, well, you don't look 53, mate. I'll give you that, so.
It's in glasses, pal. But
So look,
Shane, I don't know how much of that you heard, but basically, we're saying that we love Velvamps. Well, we're not telling people you should play a Velvamp. Everything else is rubbish.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I love
Velvamps too. I just think there's a convenience of a solid state amp that's great. In certain situations, if I was doing a really important gig, I'd probably take the Fender Blues Deluxe or the Marshall, but just plug and play. Bandit's 85-90% of the way there for me, tone wise. I think it's awesome. Sorry, Ryan, I cut you off.
No, sorry, you didn't cut me off. Yeah, I okay. So we've you know, everyone talks about, like all the guitar players, you know, have had their say. And for me, I'll say this, right? Like if you're at a gig and you hear a solid state amp, there's a big chance that not a lot of people can tell that you're not playing a tube amp, right?
Yeah.
But absolutely, it's just down to what you like, you know. And like for me, I don't like a lot of the solid state amps. But one of my favorite amps in the whole world is a Roland Jazz Chorus.
Oh, they're awesome.
They are amazing amps. And they're solid state. I do like the Kemper. I've got one, and they're so versatile. But given a chance, I would rather take my tube amp. And that's just, you know, that's just a personal opinion. And I've always thought, you know, if you have a good solid state, or like if you have a good amp, 99% of your audience won't be able to tell if you're using a solid state amp or a tube amp.
I've never had one person at a gig who wasn't a Muso come and say, you know, your tone sucked. You're playing a solid state amp, or no one cares. Like even Musos are surprised. I've heard guys play, you know, some really good amps, and then out of convenience, they've plugged into the Bandit.
Yeah.
And this is the subjective thing about all of this too. I actually preferred hearing the Bandit, not because I owned it, over their actual normal tone, because it was clearer. Yeah. So I just want to give a quick shout out to Moyle, who's just $5. I don't know if you guys did that before or not while I was away, thanks Moyle. Appreciate that.
But yeah, just coming back to that as well, like I've heard people use solid state amps and I've hated their tone, you know, so it's, but that's not for, like, you know, I gotta
throw something in. How many guys do we know at jams that have valve amps that have horrible tones? Even last night, right? Even last night, there's guys that have good valve amps that don't sound like that through anybody else's hands.
Yeah, that's...
So I this is the thing. Rick was playing a solid state, not even an amplifier. He was playing what the hell was that? A Line 6 Helix into a PA system. And it was great, like, because he can play... It shouldn't matter. I honestly, when I listened back to those videos last night, this morning or whenever Rick sent the link, earlier today, of us playing, I really thought the Bandit held up extremely well in the live situation, even though I was in the black hole. So I had the disadvantage of being behind the bar and it still sounded good. But Rick won't admit that. I'm trying to get it out of him, but he's not going to budge.
But that's the thing though, Rick can play. Like, I think
that's exactly right.
Yeah, so he can manipulate the sound and make it sound good for how he wants it, because he, you know, he hears it obviously. But you know, people who can't do that,
So first and foremost, I really think the tone's in the player. It does, and the gear is secondary. It always has been. We did this great video with Ryan here, where we got a $3,000 guitar, plugged it into a $100 amp, plugged a $60 guitar into a couple thousand dollar amp, and then we played the crap stuff through the crap stuff, and it still sounded good. So it's because you can play and you know the sound you're looking for. So I don't know. I'm not as – I used to think all solid-state amps were garbage until I played a PV Bandit in San Fran, and I went, these are like really good amps, just loud and – proud, man. And Rick used to play one through a quad box, I recall.
I think, you know, I've said it the last chat that we had, and if it inspires, like, you know, if your gear inspires you and it makes you play better and it just makes you want to sound better, like that's all that matters.
Yeah, totally, good point.
Definitely.
Kevin Alban says, Rick, you look, he says, 53? Question mark. You look better than I do. I'm 37.
Yeah, turn your computer on, Kevin.
Andrew says, Ryan, love your thoughts on the Morgan amp. I think he says, when do you use it? I think that's what it's supposed to say.
When do I use it? I think I saw another question about the what model it is. It's RV35, and the cool thing about this amp is that it's you can swap out a lot of tubes, so you can put like 5881, 6L6, 6L6 tubes in them, and I've currently got the 5881s in them. The Morgan amp is my go-to grab-and-go amp.
It's your PV Bandit, is what you're saying.
It's my... I don't know if I can say that. it's just my grab-and-go. Like, it's not very big. It's a 1x12, but it sounds massive. And so I'll give you guys a little bit of a timeline on what I just got, because two of the amps I just got. So I got the Morgan about 2 years ago, I think. And then I got the Crystal, which is that two rock in the middle. And the Crystal's one of my favorite two rock amps. You know, it's meant to be the, you know, based on the John Mayer sort of amp. And I love it. Love that amp. And then I got the Dr. Z Z-Rec. So because I had the two new amps, I started to play them more because I, you know, I obviously wanted to get used to them and wanted to know my amp in and out. So I stopped using the Morgan. And I bought that Les Paul and tried to pair it up with the Dr. Z and wasn't really digging my tone. But stupidly lent it to Dr. Rick, and he made it sound so amazing.
What was that?
I said, have a nice day. Dr. Rick had used the Dr. Z and he killed on it. And it made me even more, you know, I was like, oh, I really want to make it sound good. But
we would like that as well one day, Ryan. Just for you to play well one day would be just fantastic.
One can only wish. But recently I found the Morgan, you know, just does everything. So to answer your question, when to use the Morgan, I think it does everything. Like, it'll do that rock thing, it'll do the clean thing. It's the amp. When I do a cover gig, like a wedding gig or whatever, that's the amp I take, because it's, even though it's 35 watts, it doesn't, it takes a lot to break up. And that's just my amp, I think. But it's great. Like, it'll do the funk thing, it'll do the blues thing, it'll do a rock thing, and it's fat and warm and 3D sounding. And a lot of people like have come up to me and looked at the back and said, oh, I thought it was a, you know, 212s in there because it sounds so big, but there's 112. Great amp.
You had that out when we did the gig last Friday week, and I was shocked how big it sounded pointing. I find that amp, like I was saying to Rick, you know, once you got you out of the black hole side of the stage at Mount D's, it sounded killer, and having it right coming at me that gig was cool because it just was like, it was huge. It was a big sound.
Can we direct people to the videos that I just uploaded that have the Morgan in it?
Let me.
Oh yeah.
We can't type in.
It just says Shane, Ryan, Ken, and David at Mount D's or something. If you just type that into your YouTube,
is it MT? Did you put it Mount as in MT?
Yeah, MT. Yeah, Mount D's. Oh, sorry, MT D's. D apostrophe S.
All right, I'll type it in the chat. This was not a gig. This was a jam. We were just up there making some noise. So you'll be able to hear Ryan's amp rocking. And leave a comment on the video. Let's see if the $160 Bandit held its own, minus, of course, my playing.
I'll tell you what, mate. you're putting them on the line now.
We should
throw yourself at the mercy of these savage keyboard warriors. They're going to tear your lip.
I'm pretty lucky with that on this channel, thankfully. So, yeah.
I think you've got some of the more educated foot fetishist guitar nerds of any YouTube channel in the history of humans. But, yeah, if you have a look at that, again, just recorded through an iPhone 8.
You should have gone this way, mate. You would have got us all in the shot. You gotta turn the phone this way when you film.
Can you do that? I gotta check the manual.
So if you watch it on a phone, it'll look amazing because it will fill the screen. But if you watch it on a computer, you're gonna go, oh yeah. No. Thanks for filming it, man. It's cool. I was interested to sort of see how it all sounded. So,
yeah, I think everything's sounded pretty well balanced. But yeah, it's it was. I think a good sort of representative, of what the sound was like in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And that beautiful, beautiful Les Paul. That's the most versatile Les Paul that I've heard, as far as great present rhythm tones and absolutely fantastic, rich, burnished lead tones. It's absolutely spectacular. I'm really...
Yeah, it was cool.
And it's beautiful to look at. Is that it next to you, Ryan? Have you got it just hanging there? It's got to just show people. What?
It's kind of hooked up to the... The snake. What's that thing called? The snake oil? No, what's it called?
Snake oil. Yeah. So this is the Les Paul. So Rick and Shane were there when I picked this one out, and thank you to them.
It's the best looking Samick I've ever seen, man. It's stunning.
Acoustically, it's really loud.
Yeah, it is.
It's bright. Like, I don't think people realize like Les Pauls can sound like that. It's super clear.
Yeah, it's, and the crazy thing was, I remember when we were there, we were trying it. I was like, please don't be good, please don't be good. Because I didn't want to spend all that money. And we tried, how many guitars did we do? Like a
fair few. Yeah, lots.
It's funny how little vibe the great Telecasters had in comparison to that day.
Yeah.
Like we're all just like back. Yeah. So
what? Telecaster, no vibe?
I haven't seen any of your tellies in so long, Rick.
That is true. I haven't seen it. And it was great. And we put it back. I put it back because I was like, I'm not going to spend on the guitar, but it was at the end of the day, I looked at the two guys and everyone just went, let's get the Les Paul.
I was just laughing at ZD351 or John's comment before. He just said $170 on Alibaba.com. his humor is it's pretty funny. It's a beautiful guitar, man. Sounds great.
Thank you. Yeah, and I'm really really lucky. I really lucked out with this one.
Did you say what it is exactly? Did you say what it is? It's a R.
It's R9 59 reissue. So again, Fat Neck. It's I think it's 2016.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Got a nice top on it. Pretty happy with this one.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's nearly 10:30, so I reckon we'll go a couple more minutes. We'll go 5 more minutes. So if anyone has any last questions for these guys or myself, let us know. And, happy to answer some questions. But, thanks for hanging out. Thanks for all the super chat as well tonight. I don't often get or I don't talk about that on my channel at all, but it's tonight's been crazy, so. Thanks, guys. Far out.
Yeah.
That's great. No, really appreciate appreciate your support. But Shane, you've built this community, man. I mean, you know, your personality comes out through the videos. You're not some sort of egotistical, you know, arrogant turd. You're just a guy that's just into, you know, making music and making videos and tech and all that stuff. So, you know, thanks, people, man. Don't come here to be preached at, except for about Petey Bandits. But for the most part, you're just here to say, I've tried this, worked okay for me, you know, give it a crack. Or I've tried this and it sucked every which way, sort of fitting a Mustang with the old firmware, new firmware, awesome. Yeah, global flange on everything, can't go wrong. But, no, so anyway, folks, thanks. I know there's a lot of dribble and verbal diarrhea, but hopefully in the middle of it all, there's been some good stuff that you can sort of take and use, and just, you know, these are just guys shooting the breeze, but yeah, telling, I guess, what our experience has been, you know, playing music.
Thanks for the kind words. And I mean, you guys have been obviously a huge part of helping the channel grow. I mean, Rick's put in a lot of time filming stuff for me, and all, you know, and he's let me put up live clips of him playing certain things, which will be posted on the channel soon as well. So, it's been great, and this is fun. I mean, we all come from a live playing perspective before YouTube too. I mean,
yeah,
I was in my early days of playing live. I guess I played for probably three or four years before YouTube came out, but you know, I was playing at jams and all that kind of stuff. So I think when we look at stuff, we look at it from a usability in a real world situation standpoint, as opposed to some of the bedroom guys. And not to say there's anything wrong with playing at home, because I do it all the time as well, but you find a lot of the guys that have channels don't play. They're just great players who play at home. And sometimes I think you lose perspective on how great something or how bad something can sound when you actually take it out and play it with drums and bass. I've made that mistake playing stuff before where things in the mix sucked, but they sounded phenomenal on their own, you know. And, yeah, like Rick's taught me a lot about what to listen for and stuff that is going to sound good when you play live. I hated the Glon when I first heard it. I wanted to take it back, and he's like, keep it. So I kept it. And it's like, that's the sound that sticks out from everything else. It's just, it's great when you're playing it live, but at home it sounds like crap. So it's an interesting sort of thing. It's good having you guys on too, because I mean, between both of you, you've had, you know, as many amps or more than what I've had, a lot of different gear as well and different musical experiences. I gotta say, Rick's one of the most humble guys. You know, he's played with some of the best players around, and he never brings it up in conversation.
I actually have started recently, because there's this guy that we all know that does it all the time. And whenever he starts talking about himself, I just want to say, please tell me more. So I'm going to start. I might get T-shirts printed with famous dudes that I've almost played with or almost met. But, look, at the end of the day, mate, you know, it's about playing music and having that sort of shared experience where you each sort of contribute something to it, and, you know, the total ends up being greater than the sum of the parts, which sounds like wanky philosophy, but, you know, you get those magic things that happen, and that's what we all live for. So,
Totally. I mean, that's what keeps us going, and it's just like you said earlier, it's that one magical moment sometimes when you're playing live that is like, you know, like crack or something. It just keeps you going. So, not that I've tried that, by the way, but yeah.
And we don't endorse that sort of stuff. I barely drink at all. I never drink at a gig.
You have a beer now and then, don't you?
Yeah, but very, very rarely. And like years ago,
7 or 8 bourbons tops, mate.
Now, years ago, I did. I had a few drinks and played and thought, wow, I'm ripping. And then you hear a recording and it just sucked. The timing's all askew and the tuning sucks. And I remember Gary Moore talks about going on stage drunk and he looked down, there were eight guitar necks, he didn't know which one to play. And I just think, you know, for me, the music is the drug, the absolute drug of choice. And, it can transport your mind to amazing. You might have a bad day. You know, I spend my day with, you know, coughs, colds and sore holes, but when I get on a gig, all I care about is, all I care about is right there in that moment, what sort of sounds are we going to be able to make together? And so, that's what it has to be about.
And we can leave everybody with a comment of the night here. T Dunster 2011 says, the only thing I play is fat chicks. The only thing I play drunk is fat chicks. Sorry. So, brutal.
Who's that?
It's down the bottom somewhere there.
I hope that works out well for you, mate.
Stay on after we disconnect, guys, just for a sec. But just thanks to everyone who's joining the live stream tonight. It's been awesome. A lot of people that are still posting comments were here from the start, so that's awesome, guys. Thanks to everyone who's the super chat as well. I don't expect that at all, but thank you so much. And I'll shout these guys a Pepsi Max or something next time I see them, or a ginger beer. But, thanks a lot, guys, and we will catch you on the next one. I'll probably try and if Rick and Ryan are up for another one at some point, we can maybe do another one down the track. So,
I'm definitely – this has been really fun.
I'll be up for that. I might do one from work, actually, and I can have some patients that are behind me. I'll rig up a couch and it'll be cool.
You got to get one with Lexi.
Oh, yeah. Where is that little bitch? It's not my wife. It's my dog.
All right, guys. Rock on. Have a good night. And, we'll catch you all soon. And if you're still in the chat and you haven't given the video a thumbs up, but if you enjoyed it, please do. All right. Take care, guys.
No worries. Cheers. See ya.